Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is illustrator and author Flavia Zoria Drago. What are creators allowed to create? The answer for some starts and stops with what the creator looks like or where they're from. As Flavia explains, there's a problem with that. Among other topics, Flavia speaks to the many influences from Hieronymus Bosch to Tommy Ungerer that fuel her creative progress. We talk about how diverse creators are being placed into boxes and by whom. And Flavia and I try to diagnose what causes many of us to dodge praise and decline compliments. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Yes, I think it's interesting to hear other illustrators' experiences, and then you can relate to some of them to an extent.
Definitely. I always like it when illustrators who are, you know, known illustrators, you know, people who've been doing it for a long time, they'll say something like, "Oh no, I still struggle with drawing." Mm-hmm. Which I think is really helpful for folks who are just kind of starting out, because it's like, well, if they're struggling and I'm struggling, then maybe it's just normal.
Yeah, I think it's just a long-term struggle, because even if you had published a book, it's not where it ends. You have to keep making other stuff. So, yeah. And even if you do really well, it's like, oh, maybe next time won't be as good. Yeah.
Where does that come from? You know, why do we always feel that the norm is the bad?
I don't know. Probably capitalism. We want to be productive, sell, have success at all costs.
I just finished recording an interview with someone, and at the end they were like, "Was any of that useful?" And I'm like, "Of course it was. Of course it was." And they're like, "Oh God, all right, I guess, sure."
I kind of feel like that, especially now that I'm trying to do a PhD about my own practice. It's like, how is this going to be helpful to other illustrators who are interested in research, and how can Sure. it be useful for others in understanding how picture books work and what's horror? And it's like, I don't know. It's very confusing at the moment because I have just started. So hopefully it'll become better.
So wait a minute. You're getting a PhD, right?
Yes.
And
I'm trying.
Yeah. For folks who are like, wait a second, what? Yes, this is a thing. You can get your PhD in illustration. There are definitely a few programs that offer it, which would then technically make you a doctor.
Yes.
So you would be Dr. Drago.
Yes, that will be Dr. Drago in a few years, hopefully.
That's badass. That is awesome. Dr. Drago is just a great name. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky with the surnames as well. Thank you, parents.
Yeah. Well, there's actually in TV, there's a Dr. Castellano. I think his first name is Danny. It's from Mindy Kaling's The Mindy Project.
What's that show about?
Doctors.
Doctors.
It's a comedy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's a few doctor illustrators already. There's Becky Palmer, mm-hmm. and there's Ellie Dolan, and there's Caterina Manolesu. They work at my uni, but they're all doctors already, and they're just really smart and amazing artists.
Yeah, I guess the question is, if you are technically a doctor of illustration, would you, you know... Let's say you're going to a restaurant and someone says, "Ah, Ms. Drago, your table is ready." Would you say, "It's actually Dr. Drago"?
Of course. This is really difficult. I might as well use the doctor.
Nice.
It sounds cool.
That's incredible. What was it like growing up in Mexico City?
Mexico is just such a good country to live in. You have lots of color and lots of... Lots of folk art, which is wonderful. And you have also Catholicism, which is a bit scary. Like my mom used to take me to churches every Sunday. Well, not every Sunday, but for our holiday, she used to take us to see the churches and for long walks. And some of them had quite gruesome and scary Jesuses. And then she would take us to, I don't know, to see the Aztec pyramids or the Museum of Anthropology, and you would see all sorts of different sculptures, and you would hear stories about the Aztecs and how they would pile up skulls. And I guess that all those things just fed my imagination a little bit.
Yeah, you can see that in your work, definitely. For sure. Yeah, the Mexican culture, when it comes to death, you know, there's obviously the Day of the Dead, and there's a sort of reverence for death, for the afterlife. And the Italian culture, I would say, has the same. You know, my parents are Italian immigrants, and my mother especially likes to talk a lot about death, and not in a scary way, but just sort of like a matter of fact sort of way. I don't know. It's just an interesting relationship. It's not something they avoid talking about. They talk about it all the time, all the time. And I'm the same way. I grew up Catholic, and my mom would take me to church all the time, but it wasn't scary at all. The churches that I went to, you know, these tiny little churches in, you know, suburban Baltimore.
Ours were pretty as well. Like the cathedral in Mexico City is just covered in gold and has a lot of carved sculptures of saints, and it's impressive. And obviously the Spanish were trying to show off how impressive they were and how better their culture was than the Aztecs who were living there before they came. They just wanted to delete all of that.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And yeah, but it's interesting because it somehow merged and into something really weird, which is Mexico now. It's a mix of old traditions and Spanish culture, and it's neither of them at the same time. Like I can't say that I'm an Aztec because I'm just not an Aztec. I'm a Mexican. I grew up knowing all these. I existed in this mix already, and I just guess I don't know. I guess I just enjoyed the best of both worlds.
Sure. I understand you were a fairly shy kid.
Yes,
Would you say you're a shy adult?
I think I've gotten better. It's got better, but definitely when I'm in a big group of new people, and especially if it's people who I think it's really cool, I would wait for them to maybe talk to me before, and then I'll say hello, and if there's a connection, then I'll just I find it more I'll find it easier.
Yeah. I also I'm definitely not shy now, but definitely as a kid was I just felt I don't know if it was shyness, but it was just more of a choice. Like I'd rather be by myself. It just felt better. I had more fun. I felt, you know, I had fun with friends and in small groups, but it was always my choice would be to just be by myself, play video games, draw, and that sort of thing. So maybe that was shyness, or I don't know, but
Well, to this day, I really enjoy meeting my friends. I like seeing them. It's refreshing, but I equally love spending time in my by myself, drawing. And I guess that's why I spend so much drawing as well. I remember being in high school, and during summer breaks, I would make drawings. I was into anime, and I was drawing fairies because I went to see Lord of the Rings, and I was very much into fantasy, and then the art of Alan Lee, and I just wanted to draw and draw and draw, and then I would talk to other schoolmates, and they were asking me, "Aren't you bored? Like, Aren't you bored staying home? And I was like, no, I'm pretty happy making one drawing a
Right,
day.
right. Yeah.
Very disciplined as well.
Well done. When did illustration, like the idea that illustration was a thing, like how did that make its way into your life? How old were you?
I was after university.
Oh,
I
okay.
mean, when I was a child, I liked painting, but I didn't. I was afraid of the idea of the starving artist. And then when I grew up a bit more, I was not very much into the idea of modern art and installation. And I felt that if I studied art, then I would get into that kind of project, and that was not what I wanted. And then when I was about 8 or 9, my sister studied graphic design, and I used to spend like she's 11 years older than me, and I was a little girl, and she was taking photographs, hanging out with her friends, she was drawing, she was doing like posters and logos, and I thought, oh, that looks cool. I could maybe use my drawing skills in that career. So also in Mexico, we don't have illustration as a BA or as something that you can
Right.
study. You either do graphic design or visual arts. And as I've said, I didn't know I wanted to be an illustrator. I just thought I want to do logos, and then I want to be like I forgot his yeah, like Javier Mariscal, who was the designer of Kobe, Barcelona 92, 92. And I thought that's the thing I wanted to do. But then I started working as a graphic designer. And some of the projects weren't as exciting as I was expecting them to be. And I had no idea that you could be an illustrator. I went to the bookstore, and I saw some illustrated books, but it's like, where do I start? I have no idea. And
Right.
can't remember how I connected with a group of illustrators in Mexico, and they were the ones that got me into the illustration world. They told me, well, there's book fairs and there are contests, and you can apply and you can make your portfolio and you can chat with editors. And my interest just started growing. I wanted to make stories and I wanted to illustrate them, but I didn't even know which was the difference between an illustrated book and a picture book,
Right.
because no one told me that.
Right.
So,
In terms
yeah.
of like, in terms of influences, are you familiar with this Mexican illustrator by the name of Miguel? His full name was Jose Miguel Covarrubias Duclad, Duclaud. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Anyways, he was born in Mexico City. He left Mexico City, went to New York. He did a bunch of illustrations, once specifically for Vanity Fair with a series of illustrations of the Harlem Renaissance. He was described as being the man who discovered black people in the United States. And it was because, and this was 19 early 20s. And the reason he was called that was because at that time, depictions of black people were quite stereotypical and harmful. And he didn't do that. He depicted them in a way that was respectful and so on. So then, and then later on in life, he traveled a lot and got into anthropology. The New York Times referred to him as one of Mexico's most popular and successful modern artists.
I think I have a book about him, but I had other influences. It
Like,
might be, I don't know, I guess in Mexico we have this term called Malinchismo, which is something in which I grew up with, which is admiring European cultures and Western cultures that aren't the Mexicans. And It's been a hard realization because it means that all the things that were, that all of the art that was in Mexico, I kind of overlooked for many, many years. And I was more interested in European artists and the Impressionists and the Renaissance and then Hieronymus Bosch. I loved his work. I have, my mom had a book of him. But and it's something I'm still behind. I'm still behind it.
You've got
I think
time.
With illustration is my interest with Europe started because I thought, oh, I really like the illustrations that are that is being done in Spain. So I traveled to Spain, and then I was in Spain, and then I thought, oh, I really like the art that's being done in France, and I traveled to France.
Yes, you did.
And then I ended up here because I knew this would be in England because this would be. This would give me the access of maybe getting into getting myself acquainted with bigger publishing houses, which was my goal.
Yeah,
but
like quite literally physically meeting editors, art directors, people
really
who could connect you with them.
It really makes a difference. Even if we have now social media and email and your work can be known by people in all countries, meeting the publisher and having a chat with them, I guess that will give them the impression of, well, maybe I can work with this person. Maybe we have interests in common. Maybe we can work as a team.
Do you feel that though, like, you know, now that, you know, obviously with the internet and everything, it is a much more global community at this point. Like, it's easier to get in touch with folks who doesn't matter really, really where they live. I mean, it is nice to meet folks in person, but, you know, for people who just simply cannot manage to get to a place where they can meet somebody in person, it's not the end of the world. It's not even that big of a deal. You know, as long as you're staying connected digitally and figuring that sort of way out, then you can also, you know, get your foot in.
It's definitely an advantage that didn't exist before, I think.
This episode is sponsored by Skillshare. Skillshare is offering listeners of the Illustration Department podcast a free trial of premium membership. If you're going to take just one online class, take one with the ID. If you're going to take two online classes, take one with Skillshare. They offer fascinating classes on topics including productivity, freelancing and entrepreneurship, creative writing, and much more. Members of the ID know that I do not like the word perfect. It is a word that does not serve us as artists. Let's agree to replace perfect with progress. So, practice makes progress. Whatever goal you have in mind, advancing toward it is achievable with short lessons, hands-on projects, and classes you can fit within your schedule. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/ID, where you will get a free trial of premium membership. That's 1 month free at Skillshare.com/ID. Now back to my conversation with Flavia Drago. You received a lot of praise after winning the Klaus Pfluger Prize, not least of which was from Walker Books in the UK, who said, among other things, "We love her. And we're so very proud to be Flavia's publishing home. We truly cannot wait for you to see the many gems that Flavia still has to come. She's going to knock your tiny socks off." First of all, I don't know how they know that I have tiny socks, but that's not the point. The point is, how do you handle praise like that? Or any praise?
I don't take it very seriously.
All right.
I get excited, and then the next minute I'm going back to reality, going back to work, and I have deadlines to meet. I have a story to write. I have a story to illustrate, and it all goes back to I need to make the best of this project which I am currently doing.
Right.
How am I going to do it? So it's very exciting. I was very happy
yeah.
to receive the the price, but it's like, ooh, now I have to go back to work and I have so many things to do.
Yeah, that's healthy, I think. Hear it, like accept it, appreciate it, and then kind of move on. I tend not to do that. I tend to deflect as much as possible. I feel very uncomfortable when I get some kind of praise. It's like, oh, no. That no. That didn't happen. No. I don't need. It's not. That wasn't me. It was you. Or
Yeah.
it's. I think there's a. It's something I personally need to work on. If someone says something nice about me, I need to be like, thank you. That was very nice. And I thank you for saying that instead of like, oh, no, and getting all weird and awkward and uncomfortable and deflective.
It is a bit strange though, because you're like, why did they give the price to me? Is if everyone else's work is just as good, if not better than mine. But equally, you take it as well. I was the
Well,
lucky one, and
yeah. Well, look,
they
it's
had
like
the reasons,
your work is
whichever
good
reason.
too. It's like that's the thing too, is something that I talk to a lot of illustrators. This is something that comes up a lot. Other people are good. I'm not good. Like the formula seemingly is other people are good, therefore I'm not good, which is not true. Other people are good and I am good. That is true. Like that stuff exists simultaneously. Just because other people are good, just congratulate them for being good. Be happy that there's good illustration out in the world. And also acknowledge, honestly, objectively, that you too are good. Yeah, and that's something that, it's like sounds obvious, but there's I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with folks who are like, oh well, I just scroll through Instagram for 5 minutes and everyone's so good and I suck. And I'm like, no. That's not it.
Yes, it's not, it can be very unhealthy to go to
Oh,
Instagram.
for sure. And it kind of leads to like originality too. With like I'll give you some more. Here's some more praise for you. I was looking through your portfolio. I was struck by the richness. Now, like hearing you say like Hieronymus Bosch and going to these churches with these skulls and stuff, it's now making more sense to me. But when I, before I talked to you, I was looking through and I was struck by the richness and depth of the worlds that you are building. There's a lot to take in with your work, but it doesn't feel overwhelming. There's an overarching sweetness to your characterizations and the worlds, but I somehow feel like a bit uneasy. Like I'm looking at a really cute, am I looking at a cute image of someone vacuuming their living room, or is this actually a dystopian hellscape? Like I kind of don't know, you know? So this just looking at your portfolio, I was mumbling to myself like, wow, this is really original, which then led me to the idea of originality. Like when I hear or see people say that an illustration is quote so original, I want to ask like relative to what? Like just because you've never seen it before doesn't mean it's original. It just means that you just haven't seen it before. So I like to think that originality is inherent in us. And we just need to get out of our own way, aka stop doom scrolling on Instagram. So, do you think about originality? Like, what does it mean to you, if anything?
Originality. I think this thing about being original. I don't know. Originality would mean being unique, but we're all really unique.
Yep.
How can you make your work stand out? How can you make it different from the others? And I think that at least for me, well, at least the answer for me is to take all the things that I love and use them in my art. Like, if I like Hieronymus Bosch, if I can, I'm gonna draw a reference from him. I like medieval images. I'm going to use them in my work as much as I can. I like horror movies. I like Day of the Dead. I like folk art. I like and then I'll tap into my own experiences as well, which by doing so, you can touch other others, if it's interesting for you, there's a higher chance that it'll be interesting for others. And there have been times where people are also waiting things from me, because I'm Mexican, I must draw certain topics or not. And I kind of feel that's reducting me to a single identity, whereas I have been someone who has enjoyed art from everywhere around the world. And why can't I include that in my work? Why does it have to be only Mexican? It's like that thing can happen as well when people know you come from a certain place. They can expect certain things from you. But I think you can carry on evolving and changing. And as you grow old, you learn to like other things, and then you learn to include them in your work. Your opinions change.
Sure.
So,
That's a good point.
yeah.
If you're a creator from an historically marginalized, or underrepresented group, and your interests are wide and vast, but then why are you then expected to produce work that is not of a wide and vast subject matter or subject matters?
Exactly. Maybe that's what has surprised people, that it's a mix of all these things that maybe shouldn't belong together, but why not?
Why not?
The world is a mix of experiences.
Yeah, I as a someone with a very Italian last name and first name, sometimes, I mean, the other day I was at a, I, this is a true story. I was at the hardware store, and I'm like a rewards member at the hardware store because I go there a lot. And not because I'm always fixing things. It's only because I have to visit the hardware store like five times to fix one thing. My father-in-law joked that, we can gauge the difficulty or complexity of a home improvement job by the number of trips you take to the hardware store. Like we look at something and go like, oh, that's leaking. All right, that's definitely a three-trip job. That's what that is. But anyway, so I'm at the hardware store and the guy's like, what's your name? What's your last name for the rewards points or whatever? So I give my last name. I spell it out loud, and there's somebody behind me. It's a true story. Every word of this is true. Someone behind me. I said, Castellano, and I spell it. And the very next sentence I hear is, "Are you in the mafia?" Because
No.
A, it's Italian, but B, there's a very famous mobster who was gunned down in Brooklyn by the name of Paul Castellano. And it's just like it's slightly annoying. It's kind of fun sometimes, depending on my mood. Other times it's like, I'm in the mafia. I also eat spaghetti and whatever, right? But it's like minuscule compared to someone who like is either Mexican or comes from some other group and then can't have the career. Like for me, it's just like a tiny little annoyance, and it goes away in 5 seconds. But in this instance, putting creators in boxes, like, well, you're that, you come from that background, well, then you can only draw and write to that, and not to, other
Exactly.
something that's of interest to you. It's
I
got to be
have this.
frustrating.
It is frustrating. I have this very, very talented friend who is a writer. He's a writer, and he writes about children's literature in Mexico. And he's very famous there, Adolfo Cordova. And I was surprised. I asked him if he hadn't thought about trying to publish his books in different languages, and he told me that he tried. He went to, I think, a German publisher, but these people told him that they weren't really interested because he made this amazing book about secondary characters in fairy tales. So he wrote the story about the Cheshire Cat, the Blue Fairy, the swans, and when he showed this project to these European publishers, they told him no because it's not Mexican, and they were expecting him to write something more Mexican. But it's like fairy tales are also part of our childhood experiences. I grew up reading fairy tales, and now fairy tales are a big part of my own artwork, like reinterpreting the characters, and just going to the dark side of fairy tales is something that fascinates me. So it's like, why are we just put into a box and we are told about the things that we can and cannot do? Like, and there's this other illustrator, Gabriel Pacheco, who is Mexican as well, and his illustrations are usually they're sepia tones and then some spots of color. And he was also giving a chat in a book fair, and some publishers were amazed because why are you not painting with more colors? I mean, Mexico is very colorful. Why are you choosing these somber tones? And he was like, well, yes, I understand your question, but equally, I grew up in Mexico City. And have you actually seen Mexico City? There are colors which are quite gray and dark. And it's just, again, putting you in a box. And I feel that now with representation, some publishers might want to tick some boxes rather than choosing the person and allowing them to work in the way in which they want to work. Like, I was very, very lucky with Walker because they gave me that freedom, and they were listening to the suggestions that I was making. So that was this is why the book went was such a fun thing to develop.
And you're talking about Gustavo the Shy Ghost, right?
Yes, yeah. I'm talking about Gustavo.
It's I mean, speaking of shyness, like Gustavo, he's a shy little ghost, and he wants to basically, you know, meet the other ghouls and monsters and such, and decides to put on a concert. I won't spoil the ending here, but, and it's adorable. You know, it's such. Do you find? I mean, I assume there's a little of you, or at least you as a child in Gustavo. Would that be a safe assumption?
That's accurate. Yes. Like, there's this scene where Gustavo is looking at the monsters from a balcony, and the monsters are just playing and having fun. And I remember I was a little child in kindergarten. And in the lunch breaks, I used to sit by the wall and just look at children. And I was thinking, how do they do it? How do they say hello and start playing? I mean, who introduced them to each other? And the same happened at parties. And whenever I had to go to the shop and, I don't know, ask for sweets, I would hate that because I had to talk to a stranger and then ask them the thing that I wanted to get from the shop. And it was just a lot of uncomfortable stuff to endure.
That wasn't my experience, but my daughter has that experience, which is very bizarre because when she is a like world beater. I swear to God, she's going to be like president of the universe or something. She's just, she's on a mission. But like we're at a restaurant or something, and my kids are, I mean, we now live in rural, woodsy Pennsylvania, but the kids for first 10 or so years of their life were New Yorkers. So we would go to restaurants a lot, and they would be, you know, ordering food and whatever. And one of my daughters, she just can't do it. She can't talk to the wait staff, you know. She'll like whisper her order to us, and then we'll say it to them, or she'll whisper it to them. But you know, it's not like there's anything wrong with any of that. You know, it's just the way you process your environment.
Yeah, Yes, exactly. And it, I mean, I had a conversation with a friend who was a bit anxious because her children was a bit shy, and she was scared that maybe that would be difficult for her child. And I told her that, I mean, as a child, I was shy, but it's okay when you get to meet people that you really connect with. You keep them close, and that's a good thing as well. And I mean, it fades out, and it doesn't mean that you don't have ambition and that you don't want that will stop you from doing things, unless it's something extreme, of course, and you need to follow up differently. But if it's normal social anxiety, you can deal with it, and you can overcome it to a certain extent, and you can find strong connections as well.
I mean, it could stem from a lot of things, and undue embarrassment, or being in a constant protective state, ongoing defense mode. It could be a lot of things, it kind of ebbs and flows. I don't see it shyness as a mental illness, There are some folks who do. It's like, well, something's wrong with a shy, a shy kid, something's wrong with them. No. Nothing,
And it's
nothing's wrong with
like,
them. They're just, maybe more observant.
exactly. Sometimes you just want to sit and observe the interactions
Right.
in a party, and
Or
that can
in a
be very
graveyard.
interesting, or a graveyard, yes. And that can be very
Of
interesting, and someone
course.
else will sit next to you,
Yep.
and you'll be both puzzled about how humans behave.
I think I like to believe that there's just a higher degree of curiosity in shy people. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just rather just take half a step back, be curious about the situation, and then in their own time, in their own way, come into whatever situation they need to get into, Anyways, always we're always keeping in mind that there are illustrators listening to this podcast, what would be one little bit of advice or a little bit of insight that you've gained that you would like to share with those folks and everyone else directly?
Choose I don't know. I'm going to say something that I've learned from a publisher, and this guy is Alfonso Ruano, and he worked in SM España, in Spain. And I was showing him my portfolio back when I was just starting, and he looked at it, and it was like, when I started being an illustrator, I really, really wanted to show that I could draw, that I could draw everything. So I would make images that were just filled up with stuff, and there was no space for anything in the illustration to shine. Like if I made a picture book, every one of the spreads would have lots and lots and lots and lots of elements. And he told me, "Look, I can tell that you can draw, I can tell you that you can do all these characters, I can tell that you can build this world. But what would happen if you were to isolate these elements in order to give light to this central and more important one?" And I got a bit angry when I received that comment. Like, what's wrong with my images? I like them to have lots of detail. I love detail. And then I went to a bookshop and I started observing other picture books, and I noticed that there's always a flow and a rhythm, and there are different ways in which you can play with an empty space and just make it part of the story, and you need to choose when to be loud and when to be silent.
To learn more about Flavia, visit flaviazdrago.com. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. In return, you will receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes we're calling Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit us at illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the alumni showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.